Good morning. How are you today? Can you all hear me? I wanted, first of all, we'll do a little sound check, make sure everybody can hear and see.
I can hear Richard Scow for the state.
Okay.
This is Terrence Jackson for Brandon Hill.
Okay, very good. And as you can see, the justices are a little bit spread out themselves. We've got Justice Silver in Las Vegas in the courtroom. I'm in the courtroom in Carson City. And then Justice Stiglitz, are you there?
I am, Chief. I'm here.
Okay. And Justice Stiglitz, it's difficult doing these virtual arguments. Occasionally, sometimes you don't have sound, sometimes you don't have audio, so we can't see Justice Stiglitz today, but she's here. And Justice Silver, can you hear?
Yes, I thought Terry Jackson might be a cat today, but it looks like his animation is off, so that's good.
Okay, everybody is appearing and the audio is working, so I think we're ready to go. So I'll go ahead and call this matter up. The last matter we have on today's agenda is docket number 78862, Brandon Hill versus State of Nevada. And Mr. Jackson, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor, I'm ready.
Thank okay, you. And would you like to reserve a little time?
Let me reserve 2 minutes, if the court would please.
Okay, 2 minutes, you got it. So you can go ahead and proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. This is my chance to argue for Mr. Brandon Hill. He was convicted of murder, as the court knows. And I'm going to focus on one issue, if the court would please, and that's the issue regarding whether or not his counsel wrongly conceded his guilt. If the court wishes me to respond on other issues, I'll be happy to do that. But I thought that was the issue that might have the most bang for the buck for Mr. Brandon Hill because of the recent United States Supreme Court case, McCoy versus Louisiana. I think it directly dealt with the decision in the Nevada Supreme Court that the defense attorney relied upon when he conceded guilt. He actually had a hearing before he did his closing argument with the court, and he made a couple statements to the court that I just want to emphasize in this argument. He said he was making a strategy decision to do this. The Supreme Court stated, this is the kind of decision that should be left to the defendant. The defense attorney doesn't make the decision to concede guilt. It should be done for the defendant, but it should be the defendant's decision.
It's Mr. Jackson, clear. Can I ask you a question in that regard then?
Yes.
Did Mr. Hill object at any point?
He didn't object on the record, but it's clear that he didn't really have a chance to. I'd like to have the court look at the record very carefully. Because what Mr. Abood said when he talked about this, and I want to read this to you, on page 1678, he said, my client knows he always has post-conviction rights if he disagrees with my thinking. Basically, he did say he talked it over with Mr. Hill, but basically he told him, this is what I'm going to do. If you don't like it, you can do post-conviction. Now, there's no way that Mr. Hill was going to stand up in the middle of Mr. Boo's argument and say, Your Honor, I don't want you to do that. He wasn't sophisticated legally. He wasn't going to object and say, Your Honor, I don't want Mr. Boo to say that. I don't want him to say that I'm guilty in the middle of the argument. That had pointed out to the jury that it would even emphasize it more to the jury. If you read what Mr. Abood said, He cited Armenta Carpio to the court. He said, the court trial judge has no obligation to canvass the defendant before I do this. He didn't want to canvass. He told the judge, no, no, you don't have to canvass. You don't have to canvass my client. Why would he do that if he thought that the defendant was going to object?
Mr. Judge Jackson, what about the fact that there's no affidavit attached to post-conviction by your client, or somewhere, you know, when I reviewed it, somewhere in there saying that he objected to this concession to Abood and that Abood didn't follow it? There's nowhere at all, anywhere in the moving papers that showed up.
But he did advise me of that, and I think you can tell from reading the record that it's pretty clear that he didn't want Mr. Abood to go forward this way.
Where in the record does it indicate that?
I think if you read page 1678 carefully, it says the way Abood is stating it, he says it's my decision and mine only. He says it clearly. He's not accepting the defendant anything from the defendant. He says, and he's also citing Armenta Carpio. I think it should be prima facie evidence almost. If you plead not guilty and go to trial, you don't want to concede guilt. You're not going to get up there and say, I'm guilty. He wanted a trial. If he wanted to plead guilty and argue that he shouldn't get the death penalty, he could do that.
In a death penalty case, doesn't that become a very significant strategy issue for counsel? I mean, to take that away from them.
McCoy said it's not counsel's decision to do it. It's the defendant. It may be a significant strategy.
If the defendant objects, you take it from there, right?
I think you can imply that I think you have to canvass. This is what I would argue. There wasn't a canvass done here, and it's clear. I think it's clear from the record that Mr. Abood.
But Armenta Carpio doesn't require a canvass.
I think impliedly it does. Carpio doesn't, but I think it's been overruled by McCoy. If you read McCoy carefully, it says, it's the defendant's decision, the defendant alone, and the defendant's autonomy. The defendant's autonomy is really put at a high level in McCoy versus Louisiana. They stress that it's the defendant's autonomy, not the attorney's.
Well, and it also holds that the counsel's choice to admit the client's guilt as a defense strategy against the client's objection is a violation of the Sixth Amendment.
It does that, but I think it implies that the defense counsel has to be very clear what his client wants. In this case, it was pretty clear that defense counsel knew or should have known his client did not want to concede that. There's a number of law review articles that have been written since then that make clear that McCoy was somewhat ambiguous on how much a defendant has to object. I think in this particular case, the defendant was basically told by Mr. Abood, who thought he was doing the right thing. I'm not putting Mr. Abood down by thinking this was the best way to handle the case. But the Supreme Court and Armenta Carpio was the law then. The law changed. Now, the second argument the state's going to make, and I probably want to save my rebuttal time for that, is that this shouldn't be applied retroactively, that McCoy shouldn't be applied retroactively. I think it's a fundamental kind of law, one of those exceptions to Teague versus Lane, that makes it the kind of case that should be applied retroactively. I think the whole kind of emphasis in this case on protecting a defendant's right to choose, and there's a long line of cases about what are the decisions a defendant makes, his right to go to trial, his right to plead guilty or not plead guilty. These are a defendant's decision. It's not a strategy decision, which is what the state tried to argue in their brief. I think that it's clear that this is one decision reserved for the defendant. Mr. Abood, however well-meaning, did not have a right to make that decision. And because of that, I think that it was error, and the court should allow this case to be reversed and him get a new trial. Having a trial when your attorney gets up and says in opening or closing argument several times that you're guilty is almost it's a clear violation of your Sixth Amendment right to trial. No jury is going to find you not guilty when your attorney says you're guilty. I want to say one more thing about that. Mr. Abood said the reason he chose this strategy was to try to avoid the death penalty, which is a good reason. But then in his argument, he spends about 10 pages of his final argument saying that the defendant was guilty of felony murder, not premeditated murder. There's about 10 pages where he's describing how this was felony murder with a robbery. Well, now, robbery murder is one of the aggravating circumstances that qualifies as a aggravating circumstances under NRS, I think it's a 200.033 section 4. And because that's an aggravating circumstance, to argue for that seems to me to be a violation of Strickland in itself. He's actually arguing for an aggravating circumstance in his closing argument. To me, that contradicts his argument to say that he did this for the purpose of trying to avoid the death penalty. I find that kind of ironic that he's saying that this is the reason that he conceded guilt. He didn't argue that he conceded guilt because he was a good guy and he wanted to say how sorry he was. The defendant didn't even take the witness stand in this case. He didn't take the witness stand and say, I'm sorry I did it, I didn't really mean to. That might have been effective. Instead, he remained mute. He had a right not to testify, which was probably a good strategy. But his attorney is the one that said he was guilty. I don't think that had much effect with the jury. He was convicted. He got life without possibility of parole. I don't think he's too happy with that. I don't think the defendant wanted that to happen. And that's why I think the court should reverse. I'll submit with that and ask for time for rebuttal.
You've still got 4 minutes, and if you'd like to reserve that entire
If the court has questions, I'll try to answer any questions on either any of the other issues or on McCoy or any of the cases that the court would like that I've raised in my brief.
Okay. Colleagues, do you have any questions for Mr. Jackson? Okay. Doesn't sound like we have any other questions for you. We'll save the remainder of your time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Scow, are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay.
All right. May it please the court. I I will focus on the conceding guilt aspect of the defendant or the appellant's arguments. If there are questions about anything else, I will address those. But the only one that has any merit at all is the conceding guilt. My response to a lot of the arguments is I don't really think that McCoy announces any new law. I think they were clarifying existing law. They didn't overturn Florida versus Nixon. They acknowledged Florida versus Nixon and said that that is still good law, but distinguished the McCoy facts from the Nixon facts. And I think
Mr.
that's important
Scowl,
for this case.
I have a question. Why not have an evidentiary hearing on a first-degree murder case? This individual got life without, originally a death penalty case, and he didn't testify. So unlike Edward Lee Jones' case, you know, in Edward Lee Jones on that first trial, he testified. And then we know that public defender Gibson conceded guilt. and that was our jurisprudence here in Nevada, very similar to McCoy. But why not in a case where the defendant didn't take the stand? And as Mr. Jackson alleges, he would testify he did object, and where Abood has said something about he has post-conviction rights, why not just flesh that out in an evidentiary hearing?
You know, Justice Silver, if I were involved in the proceedings in district court, or if I were the judge, we would have had an evidentiary hearing in this case. I think it needs one to really decide accurately, you know, what was going on in the defendant's head and what Joe Abood, the attorney, discussed with his client beforehand. We do have references. I think there's probably enough to make a decision by the Supreme Court, but an evidentiary hearing would have made it easy.
And, you know, and generally in a district court, it does flesh it out. And this could have been like a 10-minute proceeding. You ask him it, and then you ask Abood it. And most of the time, almost inevitably, 99.9%, it's going to go the state's way. And Abood's going to say he never objected. Why not flesh that out?
That's an excellent question, one that I can't answer because I wasn't there. But my opinion is, and I have it in my notes, that an evidentiary hearing would have been helpful. There was nowhere in the record where the defendant states, "I object." And in Mr. Abood's statements regarding his trial strategy, he does say that I've explained to my client that it's a strategic decision based on the fact that this is a death penalty case, and it's difficult to argue I didn't do it. But by the way, if I did, don't sentence me to death. That's the same page reference as Mr. Jackson used, 1678. It does say that I've discussed this with my client, but we don't know the client's, Mr. Hill's, responses. We can presume that Mr. Hill was in accord with that strategy decision, but an evidentiary hearing would have helped flush that out. So if I'm allowed to ask a question of the justices, is it possible to send this back to have an evidentiary hearing?
Without a limited remand?
Yeah, without making a decision at this point, because I think it's necessary. But I will continue with my arguments on this. So what I'm arguing is Mr. Abood did state on the record that he explained this strategy decision of conceding guilt. And if Mr. Hill would have disagreed, he could have put that on the record. When you look at page 1594 and 1595 of the appellate record, they're discussing for the next day the settling of jury instructions. And the court asks, do we need Mr. Hill present for that? And Mr. Abood is telling Mr. Hill, you don't need to be here for that. We're going to be going over some legal things. It'll be all on the record, but you don't need to be there for that. And Mr. Hill pipes in and it says unintelligible, but he says, I want to be there. And Mr. Abood says, you do? Question with a question mark. And Mr. Hill, the defendant, says yes. So he knew how to express his desires. He wanted to be present when the jury instructions were discussed and settled in the face of his attorney saying, no, he doesn't need to be here. It's my position that if Mr. Hill seriously had an objection to his attorney conceding guilt in the closing argument, he would have expressed that. And there's nowhere in the record from the day before, this is outside the presence of the jury. There wasn't pressure. It was a casual conversation in court. He did not interject, but he did when talking about whether he should be present for the settling of jury instructions. McCoy doesn't hold that there has to be a canvas. McCoy only holds that a lawyer in the face of an express objection to conceding guilt cannot override that client's decision. And they held that Florida versus Nixon is still good law, where Nixon, quite similar to Mr. Hill in our case, stood silent in the face of questions about, do you concede guilt? Are you okay with your attorney conceding guilt on the record and in discussions with his attorney privately? So the holding in Nixon that, as discussed by McCoy, is there's no blanket rule that the defendant's explicit consent to implementation of a conceding guilt strategy is needed, especially when they remain silent. And it's in line with the Nevada Supreme Court cases. The court mentioned Jones. That was one where the defendant did object and testify that he didn't do it, but the attorney conceded guilt anyway.
And you know who the prosecutor was in that case, Mr. Scow?
If it was you, I was not demeaning anyone.
I was in the second Edward Lee Jones case that was remanded back after the concession.
Okay.
That was myself and Dave Schwartz.
Okay, so it's done.
So
right,
I'm well aware of the concession argument, which has been the law in Nevada since 1994.
Correct.
McCoy just says the same thing, basically.
Exactly. That's my position. There's no need to discuss whether new law applies retroactively. This is the law. The Supreme Court was just clarifying. And I'll make a note that it seems that most of the defense arguments is that prejudice needs to be presumed because counsel cannot make this kind of a decision. But there's no holding like that unless there is an express objection on the record. And so there's no discussion of prejudice in the documents. The court did ask, you know, where did Mr. Hill ever object? There was no affidavit attached. And when you read Mr. Hill's own handwritten petition, he never says in there that I objected to that course of action. His arguments are solely that this is strict and plain error regardless because it's against the not guilty plea and needs to be reversed because prejudice is presumed. And that's only the case in a situation like McCoy where the defendant does object on the record or privately with the attorney and the attorney concedes anyway. And so when I look at the record here, there is no prejudice at all. I would like to highlight the success of Mr. Abood's trial strategy. One of the main things that he was able to do by conceding guilt on the murder is contrast the strength of the evidence as to the murder incident and the separate robbery incident from about a month before of the named victim, Elvis Cunamero. But when Mr. Boot is highlighting the strength of there's DNA, there's ballistic evidence, there's video, the victim's blood is on Mr. Hill's clothing, by contrasting the evidence on the two different incidents, the murder and then the separate robbery, the jury was able to plainly see that the evidence on the robbery was pretty weak. If he'd been challenging the evidence on both, they wouldn't have been focusing on, wow, this is how much weaker the evidence is for this other robbery. They may not have acquitted him of that other robbery. And by acquitting Hill of the other robbery, it really gutted the penalty case. The aggravators, the strength of the aggravators were in this prior robbery. And when those were, Mr. Hill was found not guilty of those, it really eliminated the state's penalty case, which is why the state did withdraw the penalty notice, the death penalty notice, and it proceeded to a normal sentencing hearing. And the defendant was sentenced to 20 years to life on the first degree murder and 8 years to 20 years on the weapon use, and everything else was run concurrently. So not only did Mr. Abood avoid the death penalty, but it gutted the case. He was found not guilty on other charges, which was the strength of the aggravators in this particular case. And when you go through the defendant's handwritten petition, the supplemental petition, and all of the paperwork, you can't find any prejudice because there is none. The defense strategy was very efficient, especially in light of the overwhelming evidence, the DNA that put Hill at the murder scene, a burnt cigarette underneath the victim's leg, and the victim's blood DNA evidence on shoelaces and the white tennis shoes that Mr. Hill had at his residence.
But if at an evidentiary hearing, Mr. Scow, if hypothetically at an evidentiary hearing, Hill says, I objected, and Abood agrees that he objected, then prejudice is presumed under both the Edward Lee Jones case and McCoy, because then you've got an ineffective assistance of counsel argument and claim.
I agree. I agree with that. I fully agree. And that's why I think, and in my notes I have, that an evidentiary hearing sure would have been helpful for the parties arguing and for the court in making a decision. And I do recommend that this be sent back for that limited purpose of holding an evidentiary hearing as to the conceding guilt strategy. And that's my arguments. That's my position on the conceding guilt. If there's any questions about any of the other issues raised, I'm happy to discuss those, but I don't think there's any merit to them.
All right, colleagues, have you got any additional questions for Mr. Scow?
I don't, Chief.
Okay. All right. Mr. Jackson, you've got 2 minutes and 43 seconds left for rebuttal, if you'd like to begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. I need about 43 seconds, I think. I agree that the case should be remanded for an evidentiary hearing. One thing counsel pointed out is that the defendant said that he wanted to be present during the settling of jury instructions, and he wasn't allowed to be present. And that is, of course, when the court and counsel discussed what counsel was going to do as far as him conceding guilt. So counsel talks about the defendant not objecting to whether or not counsel was going to make this concession of guilt, but he wasn't present when this was all discussed in chambers. He had asked, the defendant specifically asked, I want to be present when jury instructions are settled, but he wasn't there, and that's when the typically objections are made. So I don't know if he even heard what was said in there, what the transcript said. They talked about Mr. Boo talked about, yes, I think I'm going to do this strategy, Your Honor, I want to put it on the record, but Mr. Brandon Hill wasn't there when that was discussed. So whether he knew about it, I'm sure that Mr. Abu to talk to him about it, but he didn't talk to him about it in the presence of the court, and so he didn't really know how to make his objection because he's a layman. I think the court should take that into consideration, and whether he would have actually said, I want to object to this, because he clearly wanted to be back there with the jury, or in the jury room or rather in the court's chambers to hear what the jury instructions were. So I think he very well may have made some objection, but he didn't. That's why I really think an evidentiary hearing is important, where we can flush all this out and thereby make a proper decision based on the recent case law with McCoy, and find out if he did or if his rights were abridged in this case. I'll submit it with that and all my points and authorities, and I thank the court for its time.
All right, colleagues, do you have any questions for Mr. Jackson? Any additional questions?
I don't, Chief.
Okay.
No, thank you.
Very good. Then, hearing none, gentlemen, thank you for being here today and arguing this case for us. This matter will stand submitted, and the court will stand in recess until the next call.